From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
She doesn't have greenhouses or even a giant garden, but Toronto-based Gayla Trail, a.k.a. You Grow Girl, has plenty of homegrown leafy greens to eat over a very long season, including some wild varieties I bet you've never tried. Last time I checked, Gayla was harvesting basketful number 40-something of the season, with lots more to come. So stay tuned to learn her favorite greens and best growing tips, and who knows what else, because when Gayla and I get to talking, but first this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
You Grow Girl, Gayla Trail, was the first garden blogger I ever heard of, and she's been online since February 2000, long before a lot of us even knew what a blog was. She's always organic and also the author of various books, including Easy Growing and Grow Great Grub. And most of all, she's someone I count as a friend, and I welcome her back happily to the show today. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, it's me. It's me. Yeah, I'm so glad. It's been too long. I mean, we talk offline, but it's good to talk online, too.
Yes.
Yeah. So before we start on the promised subject of greens, I get a lot of reader and listener questions about, like, what product to use to kill some insect or cure some disease with their plants, you know? And I read something on your website the other day where you mentioned your approach to garden care and called it not just organic, but morganic. And I want you to explain M-O-R-E-G-A-N-I-C as a starter.
Yeah, that's a term that I don't hear too often, but it's one that I've kind of embraced because what it means is really going beyond what is acceptable or, in quotes, allowable within the parameters of organic gardening practices. So
right.
That could be like what are considered safer, in quotes again, sprays, and organically certified pesticides. I hear the word morganic used more with farmers now are trying to express that they're going beyond the certification requirements. But I use it too, obviously, because I think that is what I'm doing. I'm not using any sprays now and haven't been for quite a while in my garden.
And when I tell people that, because I'm the same, I just didn't know morganic. I didn't know that word, and I love it, that phrase. But I'm the same way. I'm like, I don't buy that stuff. Even if it's listed in the U.S., it's OMRI listed, O-M-R-I listed, you know, or approved for the NOP, National Organic Program. You know, it's legally approved, even on a certified farm. But I don't buy, I don't get it. I don't bother.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's more complicated when it's a farm and it's, you know.
Absolutely.
You're growing for selling, for market.
My livelihood,
not,
yes.
Yeah, my livelihood's not dependent on a specific crop. So my attitude is, you know, it's not going to be the end of the world if it's a bad year for whatever.
Right.
You know, if there's a certain pest that, because the thing is, every year there's a pest that is predominant.
Yes.
It just depends on what the cycle is, like where your garden is, in its development, you know, the ecology of the space, but also it depends on the weather.
Yes.
You know, so some years it's like Earwig City. Last year, you know.
That's a horrible thought, Earwig City.
Sure, but some years it is, and then other years they're not. And if you're just chasing after killing that thing, like spraying it to oblivion, then in the end, like even those organic, certified organic products are detrimental. I mean, they're indiscriminate. So
yeah, some of them are not targeted only to the one insect. Many of them are not targeted only to the one insect. And some have residual effects, like for spraying an orchard. Like I have very old apple trees. People say, well, what do you spray on your trees? You know, and I'm like, nothing. Because most of those fungicides that I would like to spray, so my apples and the leaves were a little cleaner, right? Mm-hmm. Well, but those have copper compounds, and copper is then residual in the soil after years of spraying, and it doesn't go anywhere. And, you know, I'm not into it, so I skip it. And I have kind of, you know, lumpy, bumpy apples, but I make great applesauce.
Yeah, and, you know, like, part of it is we're just, that's kind of how we're raised. We've been raised in gardening, is, like, spray it away. So
yeah.
I think the organic thing can, it kind of pulls from that same way of thinking rather than shifting the thinking entirely. Like, I have a neighbor who has a massive, massive cherry tree, and last year was a bad year for cherries around here. There were a lot of aphids,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, she wanted to spray, and she had some guy come out who was, like, or I guess working with organic sprays, but he, you know, he said to her, if you don't spray, your cherry tree will be dead in 2 years. Like, there's this fear, too. Like,
right.
I don't deal with this. Oh, my God, what will happen?
Right.
And and I said to her, really, your tree just needs to be pruned and it'll bounce back. It's just the season this year. There's a lot of, and he wanted to kill the ants too,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of that relationship between ants and aphids. And I said, just leave it and it will be fine.
Yeah. Yeah. No. So I just loved it when I saw them organic, and I just thought, let's bubble that up for people, because we may have listeners, you know, listening today and readers, you know, reading the transcript of the show, who kind of get it and they can go, oh, okay, that's what I'm doing too. So I just wanted
there to. There are other aspects to organic, like, but it's not something that seems to be very clearly defined, but sourcing local inputs can be another
right.
Emphasis.
Right, like I don't buy bagged mulches shipped from across the country that were from the bark of a tree in the Pacific Northwest or something. I use
right.
a local source of mulch that then a farmer neighbor has composted, you know, hot and, you know, aged and then he sells it as mulch. But it's recycling material in my community, you know,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. And then I make my own compost and whatever. But, yeah, so local inputs. Yeah, that makes sense. So greens, at the beginning of this year, I guess, at the beginning of 2018, I remember you posted like a recap on yougrowgirl.com of your leafy green harvest from 2017. And I looked at the list and it was like epic.
I know.
I was like, wow, she's eating a lot of good
making
greens.
Making that list, it was like, wow.
You had to take a nap in the middle of making the list. So, you know, and this year you've been posting most of your harvests until we all just got so hot in the Northeast and into Canada. I mean, we all just got so sick of it. I think the weather just burned us all out. But I think well into July you were posting like every, you know, a picture of like, here's today's harvest, you know, number 41 and whatever. On Instagram and places like that. And is the greens thing, is that something you've always been into? It's like you seem to have this record-keeping practice, you know, noting your greens. Is it a favorite thing?
I think probably, I don't know. When I moved to this space, which was the first year was 2011, I did have this goal, long-term goal of being sustainable in greens. We eat a lot of leafy greens.
Okay.
And I didn't want to, I wanted to minimize how much I purchased as much as possible. I really wanted to grow as much of it as I could on my own.
Okay.
Obviously, I grow a lot of other things too, but I do eat a lot of leafy greens. And it's just that has evolved over time, and it's become even more of a priority for me now, just in terms of health.
Yeah, for good health, sure.
The diversity of greens is something that has really become more of a focus.
So tell us about, what kind of, do you plant them all? Are some of them wild? Are they all annuals? Are they perennial? You know, what are some of the hit parade of the things that you wouldn't be without maybe?
Okay. So, I mean, it's such a mix. It's a hodgepodge of all of those things. So, you know, I've really embraced wild greens
like
dandelion. I can't live without dandelion. I think it shocks people that so many people here are trying to get rid of dandelions, and I'm allowing them to grow. But they're one of the first greens that become available very early in the growing season. Anything that's perennial and, you know, hardy through the winter and for this climate, which is the same climate as yours, Northeastern, is really, really vital. It means I'm getting those good greens as early as possible because, you know, by the last leg of the winter, I'm feeling pretty desperate for them. I'm eating just what I can get at the store, which is
not as good. No.
No, it doesn't have the vitamins and nutrients and whatnot in it. And that diversity is really important, getting all those different phytochemicals into our bodies. So I love dandelions. Violets are another big one that I've really embraced and learned through time that, you know, like they're so healthy and I had no idea. I mean, I was growing violets for years without, you know, really focusing on the flowers and then eventually learning, oh, not only are the greens edible, but they're really good for you. So,
that's so interesting because, I mean, this is crazy, but the way I know when there's a woodchuck in the garden is my violet foliage all disappears. You know, I have a lot of wild violets at the edges of beds. And I will see, like, suddenly just the stems, you know, like a, it looks like a pincushion on a bunch of clumps. And I know there's a woodchuck present because they love violet leaves. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
I didn't know they were edible. I mean, except by woodchucks.
Yeah. And if you're eating them raw, then you're going to want to get them as early in the season when they're, you know, young and tender and soft. But I also cook my greens a lot. And so I don't eat them, the violet, in the height of summer because, you know, that's when the plants are usually not at their best. But but early season and then late season. And I also have taken to collecting them when they're at their peak and dehydrating leaves or freezing leaves so that I can extend into the winter. Nettles are a big one. They're so good for you. And I even grow nettles now, which is insane. Anybody who has had experience with nettles will think, you are crazy.
No, but all my biodynamic farming and gardening friends, you know, who practice biodynamic theory or whatever, that's one thing that they'd always do, and they incorporate it into their compost, and they make concoctions out of it to spray on plants for the health of the plants and stuff.
They're just such useful plants.
Yeah.
You just have to be respectful of the plant.
Yes.
And it has its own space.
Yeah.
Chicory, I'm really big on. Another
Now, do you plant that
biennial?
Or is that you plant it?
At this point, it's just self-seeding.
But you started out with a chicory variety, a pack of seeds
A radicchio, yeah. I should say it was an Italian, chicory radicchio. Confusing because we tend to use chicory to talk about the wild version, but I'm actually growing cultivated Italian versions, which now they just self-seed. So, and they're just beautiful plants. You can buy such beautiful varieties that get, you know, red and colorful. And
do you let them head up? Do you wait? Or are you growing eating smaller leaves or what?
I tend to focus on just eating leaves and not heading things up, even lettuces. I prefer leaf lettuces, for example. It's not that I don't produce heads. It's that it is harder to produce heads in seasons when it's very hot and dry.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't make that my focus. I think that focusing on leaves and individual leaves instead is easier. What else? So lots of wild things, lamb quarters. And then, you know, now we're talking about summer greens because my goal is also to have greens that go right through the season. And I have been successful, and a lot of that success has come from, again, allowing these wilder plants to take over that are adapted to dealing with hotter conditions. So purslane, lamb's quarters are both what I'm eating a lot of right now.
Is now. That a chenopodium? Is that what that is? What's lamb's quarters? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I'm drawing
alba.
A blank. Okay, chenopodium.
Alba.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And you arugula? Any kind of arugula at all?
Oh, yes. And I particularly, though, like the wild Italian arugula.
Oh, it's
also,
nice.
It's a different genus.
Yeah.
I like it because it's not as hairy, for one. I tend not to like the rocket-ish varieties because they're hairier, and I don't know. They can also be tougher, and they do not like the heat, whereas the wild Italian arugula comes on a little bit later and just goes all through the season.
Okay.
So it's another very dependable green that I get, you know, in the hottest summers. And it has been a very hot summer, so
Haven't I noticed that? Oh, boy.
Hot and dry.
And then we had, like, the monsoons here. So we were, like, you know, we had, like, 10 inches of rain in, I don't know, 3.5 weeks or something, after no rain for three and a half weeks.
It's those extremes.
Yeah.
So lots of mustards. And all of these things at this point are mostly self-seeding in my garden. Lettuce self-seed. I've talked about this with you before about how I think that the self-seeding plants tend to be more bolt resistant, more adapted to your environment. That growing, you know, you see a lot of gardening books that talk about starting lettuce and other greens indoors, and I just find that they don't last.
Mm-hmm.
You can jump the season a little bit by doing that, but then once you shift them outside, they just don't adapt well, especially if you get them in too late.
Yeah.
And that's another topic is really, I always emphasize to people, the green season begins the second you can start working the soil. You could have had snow yesterday, but today it's ready to go.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Do you grow any of these sort of amaranth edible leaf things?
Oh, yes, definitely. I have a background that's West Indian and Callaloo, which can be different things in different regions, but in some islands, Callaloo is an amaranthus species.
And what part of the season do you grow that in?
So that's definitely another summer green.
Okay.
It really comes into it. It starts a little bit late. That's one that will not germinate in the soil early in the season. There are years where I think, am I going to get any amaranth? And then all of a sudden it'll pop up once it's warm enough.
One perennial one we didn't mention, it's not so much wild as cultivated, but it stays around forever and ever. It's sorrel. Do you grow sorrel? Because that comes early. That's like the first thing to wake up in my garden.
That's definitely one of the very earliest for me as well. I grow the regular garden sorrel, and then I also grow the French one that has like the prettier shaped leaves.
Uh-huh. Yeah, and it's so delicious and so lemony, and especially that's like the first thing. My ex-boss, Martha Stewart, she used to take the first whole cutting. She had a big bed of it, and she'd take the whole first cutting and make like a pureed soup. And it was just the most, you know, because you hadn't had anything, like you said, good greens all winter. You're just starving for them. And she'd make this soup, and it really didn't have many ingredients in it. And it was just amazing. And nettles sometimes makes a great spring soup, too.
Oh, yeah, I love nettle soup.
Yeah. She would make that too. Yeah, 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 yeah. So those are some of the things. I see that you sometimes are using. In the heat of summer, you have purslane. Yes.
Yes. Yes. It's funny, so many people don't realize that it's an edible, and it's a really healthy edible too. It's got a lot of omega 3 fatty acids in it. So. Yeah, love that one. Mostly, you can cook it, and I do cook it, but that's one I tend to have more as a fresh salad, especially with cucumbers because it's a summer one. It comes on around the same time as cucumbers.
Are you still sowing things? So you're in Toronto. I'm in New York mm-hmm. State. So here in Zone 5B, like I could probably still do salads, you know, arugula, lettuces, spinach probably for fall, and then even for a spring crop, you know, put it under cover. Maybe even some of the other greens like kale and so forth, which we didn't mention, to eat as baby. You know, it'll only grow a few inches tall, but it'd be delicious as a baby green. And peas, I could probably even, the leftover pea seeds, I could put those in a bed and I'd have pea shoots, you know, and I could put that mm-hmm. in a stir fry. Radishes, I could eat the greens off radishes. Even if I sowed late as, you know, right now, and put some cover over them. Do you put cover over things and are you still sowing?
Yeah, yes to both of those things.
Yes, yes, check the yes.
Although I haven't done any sowing this year because everything is still so huge. There's no, like, is there even any space to sow anything?
She's run out of room, folks.
Yeah, you know, I just did a big cutting back in some of my beds. But, and so, you know, cutting back some of those things like the wild Italian arugula will mean that I get another crop before the end of the season.
And that's another thing I think people don't know, that a lot of these do work well as a cut and come again. Like, it, unless you let it go too far and sort of burn out, you know, you keep cutting, you get more harvest, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But because I also save a lot of seed, that's another reason why I have less space, because I have like all these gnarly plants right now that are that are producing seed. You know, like a nice compact little lettuce, once it's gone to seed, is a whole other creature. So
do you what was the one I was going to ask you about? Do you grow any cresses? That's something I love it when like my local farmer friends have it. And I sort of am like, what is this? What do I start with? Do you grow any cresses at all?
I grow a few different cresses,
okay.
Actually.
Okay, recommend
like some. Flat-leaved
yeah.
ones. There's uh-huh. curly cress. That's definitely one you want to start early in the season. It really likes the cold. And once
okay.
it's one of the first to bolt. And
okay.
mine self-seed, so even being self-seeders, they still bolt quite early.
Okay.
I save some of the seed, and one of the things I would suggest is saving seed and letting some self-seed as well, because it means that you have a lot of seed to play with the next year. So,
right.
For example, this year, like I have a lot of big containers that are out in the garden that stay out year-round, and I will sow those very, very early in the season, like, you know, at a time when you think there's no way anything is going to survive.
Almost like winter sowing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, it is practically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Especially a year like this year where we had the sudden winter return. But that means something like cress that bolts really early and likes the cold, I get quite early. And I also protect those very early sown containers with plastic.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we only have a couple minutes left, and you know, you were saying wild, and I'm imagining the garden, and I remember, oh, it's got to be 3, 4, 5 years ago, you and I wrote a series of letters on the blogs back and forth to each other, and one was about what's your sort of word of the season, and mine was resilience, I think, and yours was messiness or messy.
Yeah.
And I think your current word is wildness, yeah?
And it has been. Well, it has been for a while.
Okay.
Because I realized eventually that I was using messy, but really what I meant was wild. And it just took me, it was sort of an evolution to move in away from the idea of messiness towards wildness. I was conflating the two.
So you weren't a bad girl who wasn't doing her cleanup chores. You were letting things do their thing and reveling and relishing it. Yeah.
Letting things do their thing for various reasons. That could be because the pollinators were enjoying those plants and I didn't want to cut them off from that food source. Or it could have been that I was going to use that plant material to make something, and sometimes that means growing plants that are, you know, growing them to a stage that you wouldn't.
Yes, yes. Well, and, you know, to sort of circle back to the beginning, you know, where I did find the word morganic on your website was where you were writing about one of your current obsessions, which means growing plants through to different stages, because you've been making hydrosols. And I'll explain more. They're sort of, well, I don't know what you call them.
It's distilled plant material.
Flower waters or who knows what they, yeah.
So rose water.
Rose water is a hydrosol. Yeah.
Yes.
And you've been making them and now you're selling them and stuff. And I'll turn people onto that page because it was very interesting reading about them and the parts of the plants and the distillation process. And so that was a whole other adventure. We'll have to have another visit on the show and talk about that, I guess. Okay. So thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking the time. I'm glad you're wild and no longer labeling yourself messy. I'm trying to still be resilient, the weather notwithstanding. So I'll talk to you again soon. Okay, Gayla?
Thank you.
Okay.
I was goodbye so quickly.
I know. But soon again. Thanks.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. You can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook or Instagram at awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.